Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. My name is Bryce, and if you've just joined us for the first time, a massive welcome to the community. We have another cracking episode to get stuck into today. As always, to chat through it, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. We have a lot to cover. We're going to talk about one of the reasons why we love investing in stocks and why we remain confident that the market will keep ticking higher over the long term. We've got another Pimp My Portfolio. Luke Larrative is coming back and looking at a portfolio of an Equity Mates community member. And then we're closing with a segment that I'm excited about because I've wanted to do for a little while. I want, with the help of the Equity Mates community, to compile a list of stocks with the best moats, the best long-term sustainable competitive advantages. And I've got some that I want to introduce and get your thoughts on. You've got one that you think is going to be controversial, but then we want your help in building this list of these great companies with competitive advantages. But let's start with one reason we love the stock market and we're confident it will keep ticking higher.
Yeah, this is just a bit of a feel-good reminder for everyone. If you've just joined Equity Mates, we know a lot of people are joining the show for the first time. So we just wanted to take the top of the show just, I guess, to remind people on how good the stock market is. We've done podcasts with on other shows, and the debate between, you know, that feeling in Australia of property being far more secure and whatnot than the stock market. We've done some live shows where questions have come around, the long-term power of the stock market. So, yeah, we just want to take this moment to illustrate why we're confident that this strategy that we're in and the stock market over a long period of time is absolutely the right one.
Yeah, because we all talk about the stats. You know, we all say between 1900 and 2022, the Australian stock market delivered 13.2% average annual return, including dividends. That's amazing. In the largest study of global stock market returns, Triumph of the Optimists, they looked at 100 years of stock market returns, and after inflation, the Aussie stock market was delivering like 7% average a year after inflation. The numbers are incredible. What we talk less about is why. Mm. And this is one of the big reasons why. Incentives matter. And as an investor in the overall stock market, millions of people are working for you.
Well, what does that actually mean? When you're investing, you're buying businesses. You're buying into the companies. You're an owner of the company. And at the crux of it, you have the whole company set up to make you as a shareholder money.
That's why they exist.
Yes.
To make shareholders money. Like that is their purpose for being.
It's in the Constitution.
So there's a couple of ways you can start this conversation. Let's start with the CEO. How much they get paid and whether they get a bonus is usually based on the share price. As a public company we're talking about here, which is how much money they make their shareholders, or it might be based on growing the business, which ultimately grows wealth for shareholders. So that's the CEO. But then that incentive flows down into the organization. The CEO sets goals for their team members with employee bonuses and promotions based on how well the employees help the CEO reach their company goals. Mm. And for people listening who work for publicly listed companies, they probably know exactly what we're talking about because that's how you're personally incentivized in your job. But it doesn't stop there because the third big player in a structure of a company is the board of directors, which is the group that oversees the company, ultimately hires and fires the CEO. They're elected by shareholders.
By us,
the owners of the company. Mm. And the fastest way to be not elected as a board of director is for the share price to go the wrong way.
That's it. Yeah. So in that example, you can see that as a shareholder and owner of a company, you have the board working for you. You've got the CEO working for you, and then you've subsequently got everyone in that company working towards the goals set by the executives.
Mm. Now, let's put some numbers to that theory. 2021 Harvard Business Review analysis looked at the highest paid executives for American publicly listed companies. It found that 82% of their compensation is variable, and then the remainder is their base salary. So, in an example, round numbers, if a CEO has $1 million pay package, it would mean $180,000 of it is guaranteed, and then the remaining $820,000 is based on them reaching their company goals. Mm. The difference between earning 20% of their pay and 100% of their pay is based on how their ability to deliver for you as a shareholder.
Mm. That's why you see, I mean, classic examples even here, and think about Macquarie executives looking in that $30 or $40 million paychecks. Their base salaries are closer to $1 million and the rest is just all in stock.
And let's be clear, we're not defending the absolute number of CEO pay. We're not saying that $30 or $40 million is justified.
Yes.
We're saying the fact that so much of it as a percentage is an incentive is good.
Yeah.
But that incentive would still apply if you chopped two zeros off the end of some of these paychecks, because it's the 80% being variable that matters, not the overall number.
Mm.
I want to be very clear about that. A couple of other reasons why the incentive structures set up for publicly listed companies is to make you money. The majority of CEO pay isn't in cash, it's in shares. Another Harvard Business Review found that on average 59% of CEO pay is in company stock. Obviously, the more stock they're given and the longer the vesting period of that stock, the more aligned they are with you as shareholders, because they are also shareholders.
Mm.
So I think the point to take away from this conversation is that incentives matter. Incentives, when we're talking about public companies, are all orientated around making you as a shareholder more money.
Mm.
From the board of directors to the CEO, down throughout an organization, they are all working hard to make you more money.
Yeah.
Apple has 160,000 employees. Microsoft has over 200,000, Walmart over 2 million. When you're a shareholder, you benefit from all of their hard work. And you can't say that about property.
You cannot say that about property at all. This is just one of the reasons I think that we are confident that the stock market will keep ticking up. We haven't even spoken about the fact that these companies are continuously innovating, driving change. Like, it's something that, yeah, when you compare the pair, but, well, they're not even a pair, but between property and the stock market, you can understand why over a 120-year period it's pumping out 13% returns.
It makes me think of my favorite investing book, Margin of Safety by Seth Klarman. And he writes, there's a chapter in that book called Are You Investing or Are You Speculating?
Yeah.
And the point he makes is that there are some things that you'll buy where the only way you make money is if someone at some point in the future will pay more for that same thing.
Mm.
And then there are some things that you buy that will grow and change over time, and what you sell is fundamentally different to what you buy. And I think property, for how good of an investment it has been, and for the things that you can do around, you know, like subdividing land or renovating and stuff like that, fundamentally, the block of land you buy is the block of land you sell, and you want someone to pay more for that same block of land.
Mm.
Whereas with investing, the company that you buy is fundamentally different to the company that you sell.
Mm.
Well, I'm sure that's going to inflame some tensions in the property lovers. We both are on the first rung of the property journey, and we're stoked that we get to be able to be there. So we're not anti-property, but what we are anti is the pro-property skew in the world.
Yeah,
because stocks have benefits as well, and that's the case we're making.
It is time for
Hit My Portfolio. Hit My Portfolio.
That's right. We have our expert in the studio and a community member on the line ready to get their portfolio pimped. Luke Larity from Seneca is here with us as our expert today. Luke, welcome.
Bryce, Alec, how are you, mate?
Luke,
well. Good.
And we have Jazz on the line. Jazz, welcome to Pimp My Portfolio and Equity Mates.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yes, we're excited for this one. Quite a diverse portfolio. So, Ren, why don't you give us a bit of an explanation as to what we have in front of us?
Okay, so Jazz's portfolio looks like a classic core and satellite approach. A bit over 70% of the portfolio is in ETFs, and then the remaining about 30% is in individual stocks. 11 ETFs, the biggest, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, the Vanguard International Shares, and the Vanguard Australian Shares. So some broad-based ETFs there. On the individual stock side, 17 individual stocks, including some of the biggest Aussie stocks, BHP and Commonwealth Bank are in there. Also some of the big US stocks, Microsoft and Google, Johnson & Johnson. The bell of the ball when it comes to the stock market is in the fund. NVIDIA is in there. So, Jazz, you must be loving that. So, yeah, some a big mix of ETFs and stocks. Now, how we always like to play this is, Luke, you'll give us a nickname, and then Jazz, we will hear how this fund, this portfolio came to be. So, Luke, what have you got?
All right, you stole my thunder. I'm going to call it the Core Plus Scattergun.
Okay.
So that's what I've called. Sorry, Jazz. You really should have got Dawsy. So, you know, I kind of like the overall strategy, like real high level kind of strategy, and I think there's probably some things we can do on execution that would sharpen the knife a little bit.
So, Jazz, the Core Plus Scattergun is the name of your portfolio. How do you respond to that? And I guess, how have you come to build this portfolio over time?
At least it's not scatterbrain.
I wouldn't do that to you, Jazz.
Because, to be honest, I'm a very impulsive person. If I do like the stock, I don't look into it much further and you just tend to buy it right away. I know.
Sounds like Ren, to be honest.
Jazz, we're all good. We're all good. Don't listen to it.
Can't not buy a stock.
There's a lot of good companies out there. I'm going to go so hard.
Nice. So impulsive. If you like it, you buy it. What else?
And then I have quite a big FOMO as well when it comes to stock.
Ooh, the FOMO is dangerous.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's so bad.
I think we all feel it at times.
Yeah, even I catch it on occasion. It's definitely hard sometimes.
Just on that though, so Jazz, I can understand that from a individual stock point of view, but you've done pretty well, I guess, still maintaining at least 70% in core ETFs. So what's been the strategy behind that part, like FOMO of ETFs and just hearing people talk about them and buying them, or what's the strategy behind the ETFs?
So I've been listening to a lot of podcasts for finance. I think it's because COVID, I went down this rabbit hole of personal finance, and then I've been hearing about the core strategy and the satellite. So the core and satellite portfolio. So when it comes to core, I just find anything broad-based, dump my money in there, and then don't have to look into it. That's how I came about with 11 ETFs that probably overlap.
They definitely do.
And then when it comes to the satellite, I just choose whatever that sounds interesting to me. I believe I bought in Moderna before they released the news of the vaccine. I remember that specifically.
Nice.
I just bought in a random things that I've been seeing on YouTube some people saying about these kind of stocks. But lately I've been pulling it back and decided, you know what, I just want to retire with enough passive income. So I'm just looking into the dividend kind of stock.
So, Luke, where do we want to start? Maybe with the ETFs?
Yeah, I think... Okay, so yes, there's lots of overlap in these ETFs. You can probably just simplify this down to, you know, something that's going to work for you, which would be either a multi-asset ETF, like that Total Stock Market Index fund that you've got, which is going to cover international and Australian shares and emerging markets and everything. So you could probably look to just consolidate or put new funds in there or whatever you decide to do. But that would probably solve, a lot of issues for you. You don't need to be running off and doing high dividend yield index and, IVV or, as QQQ. Like you don't need any of this stuff. You can just go, one or two really broad based, low cost ETFs, and sort of simplify one your tax return at the end of the year, but also your own thinking, and that's going to free up brain space to do stuff that's interesting to you, that hopefully is going to add value, and worst case scenario is going to help you learn, which is kind of that's realistically what Core Satellite is. It's doing what you know you're supposed to do, but then having some money in stuff that might not be the optimal way to invest, but either scratches an entertainment itch, helps you learn, keeps you from doing sillier things with the bulk of your money, so on and so forth. So think about it like that. I've got no real comments on like 70-30 or 50-50 from how much should you have in your core and your satellite. It's really up to everyone individually, and no one can probably tell you that answer. I would say with stock picking and buying individual shares, I would try and find a couple of active managers that you can read the monthly reports from, who you can maybe dial into a webinar every so often, and scratch the itch of owning stocks directly that way. You are just not going to be competitive buying shares in any of these companies, whether you've made money or not, with that investment process, or lack of process. I did a quick scan on my little database and worked out that there are 28 on average, 28 paid, I'm talking really well paid, analysts around the world on average covering each one of those stocks that you own. So that's 28 people who get paid for a living to research everything there is to know about Moderna. Do you think you know more or less about the company than those 28 people?
Well, Jazz said she got them before the vaccine came out, so it sounds like she knows a bit more.
Maybe, right? But what's the luck skill continuum there,
of course,
right? All I'm saying here is that I'm not like trying to be funny or whatever, but all I'm trying to say is that these are heavily researched, global, large cap, billions and billions of dollars at stake every day. It is unlikely that a at-home investor on the other side of the world is going to have any competitive advantage in Microsoft. It's just not realistic. So I think that whilst certainly, they can be good investments, and I'm not making any comment about Moderna or Microsoft or anything, all I'm saying is the ability to generate an edge there is going to be low. Maybe choose someone who, A, may be able to find an edge, or B, just focus on the core. And the core is going to have those stocks in there anyway for you, and you're going to generate good returns doing that. So, you make enough bets here, and, when you started investing, this stuff might have worked. Roll forward 2 years, it may not be working for you anymore. And then at that point, it's going to be too late, and you're going to be upset about it.
You mentioned the income as well, and I think one of the advisors we've had on earlier, or I can't remember where I read it, but you need reasonably significant positions in one or two to start properly generating income, rather than a little bit here and a little bit there. And interestingly, the Vanguard stock market, the total stock market index ETF, pays quarterly dividends. Their last dividend was 91 cents a share. The quarter before was a dollar. So you can see where you start building up a significant position in that. Not only are you getting decent income across the year, but you're getting exposure to almost all of the other ETF positions that you have, but much more. Building a larger position, Jazz. Does that make sense?
On a tax-neutralized basis, the capital gains and income should be thought of the same. So if your tax rate's zero, if I make a $10 share price gain out of a $20 share, the share price is going to go down to $10 and I'm going to get $10 in my pocket. So, capital growth and dividends are the same. The only difference is that share price or capital gains can be more volatile than dividends, because they're priced every day rather than priced once a quarter or a half or a full year. So it can feel safe looking for a dividend, but a dividend can be cut. A dividend can be stopped. A dividend can be turned off. So dividends are a percentage of profits. And if you take a company that's consistently paying dividends above its profits, eventually it's going to run out of money. So I just think that thinking of dividends as an income, if you're still working and your tax rate is still above zero, then sure. But I think we need to make sure that conversation's really you're going into the personal advice, thinking about your own situation world. But I just would like that concept of, on a tax equal basis, zero tax environment basis, capital growth and income is the same.
Yeah. I think the other thing is, because it's certainly, Jazz, you're certainly not alone in the search for income at the moment. It's a big conversation in the Facebook group and the Equity Mates community more generally now.
Why now?
Well, I think partly of a flight to safety, like a lot of growth stocks aren't doing as well. But I think like everyone, when they think long term, they think there's this really nice idea of having like a portfolio that pays a nice passive income. And so a lot of people are now thinking about, oh, well, what are those, you know, bond funds or whatever it is, income paying investments that can do that. But the way I approach it is like when we're in our 20s and our 30s and we're in the like the growth phase, it's about just getting the portfolio as big as possible and focusing on growth. And then you can worry about setting it up for income much further down the road when you've got more assets. Like right now, if I tried to set my portfolio up for income, it wouldn't be anything super exciting. So I'm like focused on growth, focused on growing the pie, and then later in my life I can be like, all right, well now let's turn on income.
I think the other thing with income generating or you know, high dividend, high payout ratio companies, they are inherently not growing. That is why they are returning capital to shareholders. It is because they don't have anything better to do with the money. Mm. So they're giving it back to you as a shareholder. So, you know, if you're picking a company here off the top of my head, Breville, and you're going to reinvest in a geographic expansion and R&D for coffee machines and grow your business by 15% or 20% or 30%, well, you're not going to return most of your free cash flow to shareholders because you're going to need that money for R&D and geographic expansion and hiring new people and buying parts and so on and so forth. So, you know, and that's going to generate 30% on a bigger base. And so, you know, businesses that are, we talk about return on invested capital and an ROE and all these good sort of concepts. Well, they only work when you reinvest at higher and higher rates of return. And you can only do that by not paying dividends or paying very, you know, relatively low dividends. So I think, sure, you can buy a company for a dividend yield, but you are inherently buying a mature business that is going to be growing at much slower rates, like a GDP plus type rate of growth rather than a double-digit rate of growth.
Mm. So, Jazz, a lot of things to think about there. I think the first thing was, you know, your 70-30 core satellite, like you're building the building blocks of something that will hold you in good stead. I think on the core side, the feedback was 11 ETFs is probably too many. You can probably think about where they overlap and how you can get the exposure you want, but just with less complexity. And then on the individual stock side, I think Luke had some good points around, can an active manager replace some of that exposure? And if you do want to invest in individual companies, probably having less and focusing more on ones that you want to like really understand in a lot more detail.
Go smaller as well. I think that's the other thing. I think people do this direct stock investing and they go for the big names that they know, with 30 analysts covering the stock.
And work on that FOMO.
Nothing wrong with FOMO. Investing's exciting. Embrace the emotion of it. I'm with you, Jazz.
Work on that FOMO.
So what's the next FOMO? The ETF for Bitcoin and Ethereum?
No. Nothing to see here. Anyway, Jazz, plenty to think about. Hope you got some value out of that conversation. And, of course, you can speak to Luke directly if you would like more advice. We're happy to connect you. And if you're listening at home and would like to be connected with Luke or any of the other advisors, head to equitymates.com/advice and we'll get you in touch. But, Jazz, thank you so much. Absolute pleasure having you on today. We do really appreciate you submitting and all the best with it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well done, Jazz. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but on the other side, we are going to start ranking the stocks with the best competitive moats. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Equity Mates. We hope you're enjoying the show. As Ren said at the top, we're on a mission now to start ranking the companies with the best moats, and we want your help.
Yes, we want to build the comprehensive list of companies with great moats.
What's a moat?
So a moat is a sustainable competitive advantage. Now, break that down. A competitive advantage allows a company to have above average pricings, to have super normal profitability, basically to make more than its competitors by doing when it's doing the same thing. And the sustainable aspect of that is that that competitive advantage can't be eroded by competition. And so you put that together and what it means is that companies with these sustainable competitive advantages will make more profit than their competitors and will continue to make that profit into the future. And as an investor, that is the sweet spot, because it means that company will either be able to pay you more dividends, it'll be able to reinvest and grow in different ways, be able to buy other companies and expand inorganically if it wants to do that. But honestly, like if you look at what Warren Buffett has built his $100 billion fortune on, it's all about finding those companies with sustainable competitive advantages.
Mm.
From Amex to Coke to more recently Apple, they're the diamonds that you're looking for as investors.
Mm.
And we want to compile a list because there's a heap of companies out there, but we want to find the best.
So there's a framework, Hamilton Helmer's Seven Powers Framework, which is a great place to sort of, I guess, define some characteristics that make up a moat, or that you could classify as an economic moat. Power number one, scale economy. So this is where it's scales of economy. It's where economies of scale, where businesses, as volume goes up, more products they create, the cheaper and cheaper it becomes for them to produce.
Classic example of this would be like a Walmart.
Yeah.
Like the scale that they operate on means that they can charge a lower price to the consumer than smaller grocery stores or department stores, and that keeps customers coming back because Walmart's scale means they have the lowest prices, means they keep the customers.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. Power number two is network economies. This is where more value is realized by those using the product as more people come on and use the same product.
Classic example, Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook is not a very valuable service if only Bryce and I are on it, but as soon as 3 billion people are on Facebook, it's a true social network, and that's incredibly hard to disrupt because a new social network needs to recreate that network effect, which is hard to do.
Mm. Number three is what's called counter positioning. Now, this is where a business comes along, creates a business model that competitors don't want to mimic or can't, because they'll actually cannibalize their own existing business.
Classic example of this is Tesla. So Tesla came and they introduced electric vehicles, and a lot of the legacy car makers couldn't go hard into electric vehicles because it would cannibalize their existing sales of internal combustion engines, but it would also piss off their dealer networks and stuff like that. So they just couldn't compete with Tesla. Mm. And Tesla got this massive advantage as a result.
Power number four is switching costs, essentially where it's too much of an expense or a loss in value if your customers have to go elsewhere.
Classic example of this used to be like phone contracts. You know, when it was like, if you sign up for a 24-month plan and you had to leave, you'd have to pay the full amount of the contract out.
Mm.
Does that still exist?
Look, I don't know. I think so. Especially if you have a phone. I could think of one for our business at the moment, which is Xero. It's not a loss. In dollar value, but it's a loss in just the annoyance of having to
change
to another accounting software, re-import all the data, la, la, la. We are entrenched in Xero.
Yeah. And so if Xero want to raise their prices, they can.
Yeah.
Because we're not going anywhere. Don't do it, Xero.
Don't do it. Power number five, branding. This is pretty straightforward. There's a perceived value to the brand and they can charge higher prices for it. It's pretty straightforward.
Classic ones, Nike, Apple, they just have really strong brands which allow them to charge more than their competitors for the same, for similar products.
Power number six is a cornered resource.
Mm.
Essentially, a business has first access to a key resource.
An example of this might be Occidental Petroleum, a company that Buffett has been buying a lot of recently. It has really prime land in the Permian Basin, which is like quite a productive oil field in the southwest of the US. And so, you know, they've got access to this resource that none of their competitors can then access. So they can be like a low-cost producer.
Mm, there you go. Didn't know that.
There you go.
And then power number seven is what's called process power. It's where a business whose organization or activity set enables lower costs or superior products that can only be matched by an extended commitment. I think this is just like saying there's huge complexity to this, and it's going to be really hard to crack into.
I mean, for me, the classic example here is Toyota. So Toyota in the 1980s just emerged on the scene with their manufacturing process that none of the European or American car companies could match. And it just meant that they were more efficient, that they were producing cards at a lower cost. It meant that they not took over the world, but they became massive. They're the biggest car maker in the world, I'm pretty sure now, or right up there. For the other car makers around the world to catch up, it took like massive reorganization, massive negotiations with key stakeholders, retooling plants, and it took a long time for them to catch up.
Mm.
That process advantage that they had was a real sustainable competitive advantage.
Mm. I remember that in business studies, absolute classic case study. All right, Ren, so to close out, we've got a couple of stocks here to kick off our quest to build the best list we can of stocks with great moats. Now, you've got a few here, so do you want to kick off?
Yeah, I want to start with my stock of the year from last year, Axon Enterprise. The more I think about this company, the more I'm just like, God, it's a great moat. So Axon emerged as a company that was trying to make non-lethal options for police, and so they introduced the taser, but that's not what I'm thinking about here. It's their tech platform that they've built, evidence.com, and so essentially a lot of the police body cams in America and Australia and around the world automatically upload, so they're Axon, and they automatically upload to Axon's tech platform. But now also all of these other stakeholders in the criminal justice system, prosecutors, but also like victims of crime, or, you know, like venues where crimes happened, they are all uploading their evidence to evidence.com, Axon's platform. You know, like if your shop gets robbed, you're uploading CCTV footage to this platform. And so this platform then has such like a rich amount of evidence, and the ability to then like start up with a new platform and like have to, similar to your Xero example, like that switching cost is just incredibly high.
Mm.
But at the same time, the network effect of having all these different stakeholders on the platform, it becomes so valuable and it becomes so hard to switch.
Mm.
So that's a moat that I think is pretty impressive.
So that was power number two, network economies, and power number four, switching costs. So that's Axon. What else?
All right, I want to come to Australia. This is one that I think is hard to beat. Cochlear.
Yep.
So the cochlear implant, I think, is just an incredible moat, because the cochlear implant is in two parts. There's a surgical implant under the skin, and then an external sound processor. And once you have the surgical implant, you're essentially locked into a cycle of upgrades of the sound processor.
Mm.
I was doing some research, and in the US, insurance companies and Medicare authorize a replacement sound processor around every 5 years, and you're not switching to another.
No, you're not implant. Constantly getting implants done.
Once you're in, you're locked into that upgrade cycle really for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's a pretty defensible moat.
Definitely. What else?
Okay, one from my Coles days that I always would think about. Brambles, the company that owns Shep
Pallets. Yeah.
So the network effect on Shep Pallets is wild. So every trucking company, every manufacturing facility, every warehousing facility, and then all the retailers as well, they all have Shep accounts. And so it means if you're delivering a pallet through a supply chain, you can hand off the pallets to different parts of the supply chain and track them, and it means no one's losing out.
Yeah.
Because it's like everyone's on this Shep network. There is a competitor, Loscom.
Mm.
They're also quite big, and everyone's probably got an account there as well. But Shep is the
good
big
luck
kahuna.
Trying to start a
if you
company.
Were trying to start a pallet company and trying to become as efficient as Shep, you would have to get everyone in that supply chain process to sign up to Bryce and Alex Pallet.
Yeah.
So then we could move pallets. We could track pallets through the supply chain.
Yeah,
it's like that network effect.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Network effect, switching cost, cornered position. Oh, no, not cornered position. There's plenty in there.
So those are three examples that I wanted to bring to the table to, I guess, give people a sense of the list that I'm trying to build. And I want to make this a public list, publish it on our website. I was thinking we could even do like a bracket tournament for the best moat.
Okay.
But I think, you know, like these are the companies that get me excited, companies that have these sustainable competitive advantages. So hit us up at equitymates.com/contact and let us know a company that you think should be on this list, and I'll compile them and then share them with the community. And as I was talking about this segment, you were laughing because you were saying that you have a company that you want to add to the list as well.
Yeah, slightly controversial company.
Controversial's good.
Altria Group.
Oh, tobacco?
Yeah, so they own Philip Morris.
Yeah.
As well as US Smokeless Tobacco Co., John Middleton, Helix Innovations, and another company, NJOY. Firstly, their website is homepage, Moving Beyond Smoking. That's their homepage.
Yeah.
From tobacco company to tobacco harm reduction company. That's what they're positioning themselves as, i.e. vapes, baby.
Well, not just vapes.
Plenty of other things, but I don't want to... Well, we can go into this.
Didn't Philip Morris bought Zyn?
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reason that I think this has a moat, A, scale, biggest tobacco company in the world, but B, switching costs. You're not going to convince your customers to stop smoking. Nicotine is addictive. Sure, they can go to other tobacco companies, but the fact that these guys are the biggest, they have their fingers in many tobacco nicotine-related products.
I think
sheer scale.
I think that first power that we started with, the scale economies, where like their unit cost to make tobacco compared to what they sell it for would be crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, there's a reason that tobacco companies have been the best investments for the last 100 years. But even in the past, 30 years since the tobacco lawsuits and, you know, everyone really woke up to the dangers of smoking, they've been incredible investments.
Mm.
And one of my big takeaways when I was in Turkey recently was just how prevalent smoking is. Like, globally. In Southeast Asia, everyone's still smoking.
Yeah.
In Turkey, it was nuts how many people were smoking. You go to Europe, smoking's still pretty prevalent. Mm. The States, still pretty prevalent. Vaping only really took off in Australia and the UK.
Mm.
Like, everyone's still smoking darts.
Yeah. That's
so
crazy.
You know, like, Altria will probably be around in 10 or 20 years.
Definitely.
Until it gets banned and governments make too much money from the tax to ban it. So
definitely. Yeah, it's addictive product. But anyway,
put it on the list.
Put it on the list. Now, if you have a stock that you want to submit to our moat list, head to equitymates.com/contact. Just put it in the general comments along with your name. We'll add it in. We'll make sure we mention it on the show as we progress, or hit us up in our DMs on our Instagram page. And we would love to hear from you. But Ren, that brings us to the end. If you'd like to ask us a general question, submit to Pimp My Portfolio, or just, have a chat and
get in touch,
head to equitymates.com/contact. And if you get a lot of value from our show, then we would really appreciate if you could leave a 5-star rating and a review through your podcast app. It really does help us get in front of new audience. But Ren, absolute pleasure. As always, chatting stocks. We'll pick it up next episode.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 54067. 697.